Welcome, everyone, to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is May 23rd, 2017. Just want to say, I know there's some people in the room here for Senate Bill 101. We are actually going to hold that over, so I don't want to have you wait here the whole time. I'm sorry if you came from afar. We're going to hold it over to Thursday. There are some people who are working on amendments right now, and carry over. You know what? I'm going to open Senate Bill 101 to be really official for the purpose of carrying it over to Thursday. No, wait. Thursday.
May 25th
at the 8 a.m. hearing, but we're going to hear it toward the end of the hearing because we have a very full panel that day that we're going to get going on. So it'll be more like 9:15, somewhere between 9:15 and 9:45. To let you know, there, I know that Representative Noble and Representative Olson are working on some amendments, so feel free to talk to them if you're interested. And I know Representative Sanchez had some questions and really wanted to be here for the conversation, and so I'm sorry to not give prior notice to holding it over. Just arranged that with Clyde Psyche this morning. So look forward to seeing you on Thursday, and if the amendments are not ready, we'll at least have a conversation about it on Thursday. So I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 101, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 58. Cassie, could you read us the summary, please?
Senate Bill 58B requires the long-term care ombudsman to appoint the residential facilities ombudsman. The bill prescribes duties and powers of the residential facilities ombudsman and requires the long-term care ombudsman and the residential facilities ombudsman to enter into an agreement for protecting confidentiality of records and grants immunity to good faith complainants. The bill renames the Residential Facilities Advisory Committee as the Residential Ombudsman and Public Guardianship Advisory Board and permits the Residential Facility Ombudsman to access records of a resident who is unable to provide consent and does not have legal representation. The bill directs the Long-Term Care Ombudsman to fill the Residential Facilities Ombudsman vacancy within 60 days and declares an emergency effective on passage.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. I'm Fred Steele, the state long-term care ombudsman. With me up here is Tony Larson, our residential facilities ombudsman. I want to be able to answer any questions that you have about the bill. I'm going to give a brief overview of what the bill does, and again, want to be able to answer any questions at that point. So Senate Bill 58 is an agency bill for our small agency, agency that houses the long-term care ombudsman program, the residential facilities program, or residential facility ombudsman program, and the Oregon Public Guardian. Pardon me, I might have been running over here the last couple blocks. what the bill does is it does three things primarily. The first one is just some small tweaks to our long-term care ombudsman statute for compliance with some changes that were made in the Older Americans Act last year when it was reauthorized. So a couple small tweaks there that I could answer if there are any questions about. Second thing that it does is rename our advisory committee. So when the Residential Facility Ombudsman Program was added in 2013, our advisory committee was renamed. Pardon me. But in 2014, essentially it was about 8 months later, the Oregon Public Guardian Program was added to our agency. And I think because of the short time frame of months, the advisory committee wasn't renamed. So now that the program is there and it feels like it's going to be staying there, there was an interest by the advisory committee to rename their, rename themselves and rename the advisory committee. So that's in this bill. And then the third thing, which is the primary component of what this bill does, is create the statutory structure for the Residential Facilities Ombudsman Program. When it was added in 2013, it was added more by just acknowledging that those facility types and residents in those facilities would be included and covered by the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. But there are unique needs, as Tony could describe to you, if there are any questions again, or if she even just wants to make some comments. But there are some unique needs for residents with developmental disabilities, mental health diagnoses, even children with developmental disabilities in those particular homes that need a special focus for those ombudsman services. But even more so, the reason for this legislation and the way it's proposed in Senate Bill 58 is that the foundation of the long-term care ombudsman program, so again, long-term care ombudsman, the foundation is in the Older Americans Act. And there's coverage for, at least in our opinion, for the residential facility ombudsman program and those individuals that are covered by that ombudsman services, by those ombudsman services. But it gets a little gray. I mean, it talks about people with disabilities broadly, so it doesn't specify people with developmental disabilities. It doesn't specify people with mental health diagnoses. And since there's that foundation of the long-term care ombudsman program core in there, again, it kind of creates some gray areas. By capturing a lot of the Older Americans Act language that applies to the residence facility ombudsman program and then adapting and adopting the long-term care ombudsman statutory language into its own statutory structure will provide that foundation that the residence facility ombudsman program needs going forward. Another aspect of this, and just to touch on it, since this committee and have some co-sponsors, and Representative Stark is a primary sponsor of House Bill 2170, doing a lot of work on that. That omnibus ombudsman bill, as I think we've referred to it before, does similar things that this program or that this bill does with respect to the residential facility ombudsman program. But again, this was a bill that is an agency bill. We first introduced it last April to Legislative Council. We've been moving forward with it, and then with the work on House Bill 2170, wanted to adopt a lot of those same approaches for the residential facility ombudsman program, at least in our current structure. This bill doesn't change our agency and its current structure in any way. It creates clarity for the residential facility ombudsman program. Of course, if House Bill 2170 passes, I assume Ledge Council can work on whatever they need to realize that that bill will rule supreme over this one, just to touch on that as well. But if it doesn't pass, this would allow us to continue to move forward in our current agency structure. So with that, I'll stop and catch my breath and answer any questions that you have. And then I don't know, Tony, if you wanted to say anything, but answer any questions.
Would you like to introduce yourself and say a few words about the program now that you're here in front of us?
Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. My name is Tony Larson. I'm the Residential Facility Ombudsman. I'm very pleased to be here this morning to support this bill going forward. I was hired in September of 2015 with the charge of starting a program in the same philosophical vein as the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, a very significant national model that has functioned for 35 years for seniors and people with physical disabilities. It's quite the challenge to put together a program that's appropriate for those living in residential homes and facilities that have been licensed for intellectual and developmental disabilities and mental health, to recognize those support differences and the differences in how the systems function in order to respond to concerns from individuals that live in those homes. The program has to have some foundation in reaching that's different than a long-term care ombudsman. I think this bill does a very good job of recognizing those differences but holding strong to the ombudsman approach, utilizing ombudsmen, both paid and volunteer certified ombudsmen that go out into the field. We opened the program in July of 2016 with four deputy ombudsmen and myself. Our goal is to visit each one of the homes individually, introduce the program, introduce ourselves to the communities, and in doing that, we've reached 13 counties so far, and close to 300 of the homes, and approximately 1,000 individuals. We fielded 167 complaints and are well on our way to resolving those for individuals that have contacted us. We're very excited about the program. What 58 represents is the detail, particularly in working with individuals with limited communication, in investigating, identifying issues, as well as pursuing those for resolution for those individuals. Those were significant changes in the Older Americans Act in July, improvements nationwide for folks, and a great recognition and assistance for us in actually completing what our task is in reaching folks. We serve adults and children as well, in foster home settings, in 24-hour residential settings, in mental health homes and facilities as well, statewide. That represents approximately 2,200 homes at this point. So we have quite a bit of work ahead of us. We've gotten a very good start. We're very pleased with the outreach and the individualized aspect we've had in communities and homes. And we'll be doing outreach and opening homes in the most a dense part of the state at this from this point forward. So we're very excited to be offering the service and look to this as a tool as well as an Oregon administrative rule for us to facilitate offering services. Thank you.
Questions? How many volunteers do you have? You got you and the four deputies trying to get to all these different homes, and are you, your vision is to build the volunteer ombudsman base as the long-term care program has?
Chair Kenny-Geyer, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee, yes, our first task was actually to hire the deputies. There are five positions. We've only recently hired the fifth, so we've been a bit short-staffed statewide. And as you can imagine, we have to be strategic in how we actually open services to the state in order to reach folks. So we have a what we call a rollout method in opening communities, getting very good coverage with individuals, and serving and understanding those three very distinct systems. Intellectual and developmental disabilities, mental health, and children's systems are very different in how you resolve issues and how you actually build that communication style with both the local county government, the state, as well as the home environments. So our first goal was to actually bring those deputies on and build that in order to pave the way for the training and dispatch of certified ombudsmen. I'm very happy to say that we're starting our recruitment and pilot of certified ombudsmen this summer. And we've identified some very specific areas from our experience this year. It was a very difficult winter. And it caught us off guard in some very close areas that we actually couldn't get to that we had opened. After opening Eastern Oregon, which I spent last summer in first, the weather hitting there first, we had quite a few calls from there, and we couldn't get there. We couldn't get back to respond to them. And a lot of them have to be done in person. They can't be done over the phone. So our first goal in looking and recruiting for certified ombudsmen now are actually in those areas. And we've pinpointed at least two or three individuals in each one of those areas that we've been working with over time. And we're going to start off with that pilot in order to develop a very specific training system around that, both a mentorship type. So they'll be going into homes with deputies in the beginning, and they'll help us build the rest of that, of how we can expand it. We'll rely very heavily initially on the personalized form of that, but also in delivering it electronically so that we can meet with individuals and continue to talk about subject matter that will help people conduct their business. Again, it's very important in the beginning with systems that aren't used to this type of ombudsman work that we kind of pave the way and make sure that that's all the tools are available to those certified ombudsmen when it comes time. So we're very excited about opening up that piece of the program. Thank you.
Representative Stark, would you like to say anything about this and your other bill, 2170?
They covered it pretty well.
Pretty well. And I just want to make sure that they don't conflict in some way, since you brought up the question of if they both pass, one would supersede, 2170 would supersede. I just want to make sure as we send this on that if we have an opportunity to clarify that here, we can't do anything with 2170 out of our committee at this point.
Right. But so, Madam Chair, to my understanding, if both passed, they would end up doing a conflict amendment to line them out. A big difference is 2170 costs money that we don't have, that I'm being told. So
this might be the one that goes.
So we want to make sure at a minimum this moves forward.
Right.
And if my wish comes true, then you know, we'll find funding for the other one and then amend at the end.
So we. There is a conflict amendment, and it's not ready. So we're I'm going to hold, I'll say that when we get to open a work session and hold it over. But in the meantime, if there's anything from 2170 that doesn't cost money that you want to consider putting in here, if your 2170 is at risk of not going forward, here's your opportunity to look at that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that offer.
For that additional work assignment. Any other questions on this? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 58. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 58 in the abundance of caution. Make sure I'm doing this right. In order to hold it over,
carry over
to May 25th at our 8 a.m. hearing. Again, we'll be doing this toward the end of the hearing, and we'll hope that the amendment is ready. So I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 58. For anyone who may have come in the room for Senate Bill 101, we've held that over as well to May. We held it over to May 25th. I will be in touch with the people interested in that because we may have to hold it over to another date. So maybe we can clarify that right now. Is Stacy not available on Thursday? Okay, so I'm going to reopen Senate Bill 101 work session for the purpose of carrying it over to
May 30th,
2017 at 8 a.m. We'll close the work session on 101. And Cynthia, if you can make sure to get the word out to the other people, Lori Satinspiel, whoever was in the room for that one, Lucinda, et cetera. Okay, thank you.
Rep. is on his way down.
Okay, great. All right, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 59. Cassie, please remind us.
Senate Bill 59 authorizes the long-term care ombudsman to appear in existing protective proceeding and to file motion to remove fiduciary, modify powers of fiduciary, or terminate protective proceedings. The bill limits information the long-term care ombudsman may disclose in court about a resident of a long-term care facility, residential facility, or adult foster home. The bill makes certain visitor reports and information disclosed by the long-term care ombudsman confidential in a court file absent good cause and declares an emergency effective on passage. We have the fiscal, and it is minimal. The revenue has no impact, and the Senate vote was 29 with one excused.
All right.
So, Vice Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 59B to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair also moves Senate Bill 59B to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the bill? Any objection? All right. Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Corsick?
Excused.
Representative Meek?
Excused.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Palooza?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Excused.
Chair
Kenny Geyer? Aye. All right. The motion passes. Who would like to carry this bill on the floor? All right. I will carry the bill. Close the work session on Senate Bill 59 and open a work session on Senate Bill 268A. Cassie, please read the bill.
Senate Bill 268A requires the Department of Human Services to make certain records available to Disability Rights Oregon for reports of abuse of a child with a disability occurring in an educational setting when records are compiled under specified mandatory reporting and health information disclosure statutes. Both the fiscal and the revenue have no impact, and the Senate vote was 25 yes, 3 no, and 2 excused.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 268A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Vice Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 268A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on this bill? We've got Disability Rights Oregon in the room if there are any questions. No? Seeing none? Any objection? All right. Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Corsick.
Excused.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Palooza?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Excuse.
Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye. Motion passes. Would anyone like to be the carrier for this bill?
Carry it.
Okay. Representative Stark. Thank you. Close the work session on Senate Bill 268A and open a work session on Senate Bill 277A. Cassie?
Senate Bill 277A increases the notice period for a landlord to terminate month-to-month or fixed-term rental agreements and require removal of a manufactured dwelling or floating home with an exterior in disrepair or deterioration from 30 days to 60 days. The bill allows a landlord to terminate a rental agreement with 30 days written notice to the tenant if the manufactured dwelling or the floating home creates a risk of serious or imminent harm, and requires the notice to include specific information on the disrepair or deterioration, including risk of harm. The bill requires the landlord to give a prospective purchaser as a tenant of the manufactured dwelling or floating home copies of the termination documents outlining the maintenance issues and potential liability for repairs, and allows the landlord to terminate the rental agreement within 6 months of the new tenant occupation with prior notice requirements if the tenant fails to complete repairs. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The fiscal is minimal, the revenue has no impact, and the Senate vote was 29 with one excused.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 277A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair also moves Senate Bill 277A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right. Any objection? Seeing none, Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch.
Excuse?
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Nierman.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Russo.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez.
Excused?
Chair Kenny.
Aye. Motion passes, and Representative Helm testified on it as chief sponsor. Thank you for your enthusiasm, though. So we will assign Representative Helm as carrier.
And
please.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move that we suspend the rules for the matter of allowing Representative Meek to enter a vote on Senate Bill 59B.
Okay. Vice Chair. Representative Stark moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative Meek to vote on Senate Bill 59B. Any objection? Seeing none. Representative Meek, how do you vote?
I vote aye, and thank you, Representative Stark.
All right. Thank you. Close Senate Bill 59B again and open Senate Bill 819A. Kathy?
Sorry, I distracted her.
Senate Bill 819A expands the duties and responsibilities of the critical incident response team assigned to investigate a fatality of a child resulting from abuse. The bill details membership of the CERT and requires Department of Human Services to supply the team with all available records and information and establishes requirements for case review, records maintenance, and limits availability of records and CERT members in judicial or administrative proceedings. The bill requires the team to submit initial progress and final report to DHS within specified timelines, and requires the team to recommend to DHS improvements to the child welfare system specific to the case under review. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. We have an A4 amendment, which removes the provision that a public member assigned to the critical incident response team may not be examined in a civil or administrative proceeding, and removes the requirement for the critical incident response team to meet upon conclusion of the criminal investigation. The A4 amendment has a minimal fiscal, no revenue impact, and the Senate vote for the bill was 29 with one excused.
Okay. So I see Arthur Tower from Oregon Tri Our Lawyers Association is here. The amendment was a result of conversations between OTLA, DOJ, Senator Gelser, perhaps others. And the piece that there was not agreement on is in this A4 being taken out with an agreement to work on it over the next year. Is that correct? If anyone has any questions, we can bring Arthur Tower up. Any questions? All right. Then may I please have a motion?
Yeah, so, Madam Chair, I move the -4 amendments into Senate Bill 819A.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the A4 amendments dated May 19, 2017. Any discussion on those amendments? Any objection to the amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Okay, Madam Chair, then I move Senate Bill 819A to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Vice Chair also moves Senate Bill 819A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the bill? Any objection? All right, Ashley, the roll. Excused.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Nierman.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative
Caruso.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez.
Excused. Aye. Motion passes. Anyone
I'd like
to carry that?
Oh, Peluso.
Okay. Representative Peluso will carry that. I'm going to close this work session on Senate Bill 819. So and
101. We'll carry it over on Thursday to Tuesday agenda once that's approved.
Senate Bill 101, you have to officially carry over to Thursday and then carry it over again?
Mm-hmm. I'm always sure.
Post it. We can just post it. But we can't carry it. We can't announce carrying it over to the 30th. Okay. We will post Senate Bill 101 for May 30th. And, we are done. I want to just take a minute here to check and make sure, because otherwise bills can die. So I'm going to pause for a minute just to make sure that we have dealt with all of our bills. And I want to panel on three panels on House Bill 2007. You may recall that we heard the amendment on that bill in the rush before the April 18th deadline. And the public had not had a big chance to hear the amendment until it got released. And it's in Ways and Means that really can't deal with policy questions. And so we're opening an informational hearing on that day. Because it's an informational hearing, we cannot accept public testimony, but people can submit it to Ways and Means if and when it gets opened in Ways and Means. So if anyone is writing to you about that bill, you can let them know to listen into the informational hearing and that they're will be an opportunity for public testimony if and when it gets opened in Ways and Means. So that's that, and then we'll work Senate Bill 58 on that day. Mm-hmm. We will post 101 on May 30th. That will be the last day probably that we have bills. And then on June 1st, we're going to have a field trip to DHS just to do a quick tour of their offices. Yeah. Representative Olson has helped arrange this. We'll have donuts and get to meet the staff and see where they are. And it'll be our last chance to see Clyde Psyche, where he is. So I certainly hope everyone can join us at that. And then Cassie is looking at some possible field trips for in the future. Representative Olson has offered to host us as well as the Judiciary Committee for end-of-the-year party. So just to let you know what's on the agenda as we start winding down. Okay, any questions before or announcements?
Madam Chair, on this coming Thursday, I understand that there's the informational hearing. There are several of us who have made previous commitments to the legislative prayer breakfast and will be arriving here late.
Yep.
Please let those who know, especially as a chief, I will go back and watch and see what they have to say, but this is a commitment I made some time back.
Yep.
So.
Okay.
So I think you have one, two, three, four, five of us at least.
Five, we're not. Yeah.
Quorum to open.
Yeah. We'll have to wait for the work session at the end.
Yeah, we'll do the work session at the end.
But we can open with
So and it's supposed to be done by 8:45 at the convention center, so we should all make it back by 9.
By 9, if
we
okay.
Gosh, that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yep. Okay. We are adjourned. We are adjourned.